Hello and welcome to the FSF Podcast Live Edition. Hello and welcome, kids and cadets, to the FSF Podcast Live Edition. This, of course, is a special time that we're coming on. Typically, we come on at 7 o'clock, but tonight we're starting at 8 so that we could make sure that we could get our guests in tonight, and we are very excited to have them, of course. But we want to remind you that the FSF Podcast is the show that rolled for initiative on their interviewing skills and got a 2.
Pretty sure last time was a 1, wasn't it?
It was. But we got better.
We got better. That's right.
But before we get into tonight's show, we need to say thanks to our show partners, Level Up Sabers and Monkey Cult Coffee.
All right. I don't know which video's first, so let's watch videos. That's one. That's coffee.
That's one. I wanted to surprise you with one it was because, you know, we hadn't really talked about it. But here's number 2.
I do have to say, though, Tim, I'm a little bit disappointed that you did do Monkey Cult Coffee first, because you could have done coffee and then number 2 and made a really great joke, but you didn't. You missed out.
Next time.
There's always next time.
There's always next time,
and now that I've thought about it, I'm actually kind of sad.
I knew I was disappointing you when you realized that you missed out on a poop joke.
I had great opportunity for bathroom humor, and somehow I just slid right on by it. So.
Well, hopefully not on it, but
there's that. As long as
you step in it, and then you know, not notice that you stepped in it and track it around the entire house.
No, we're not.
I mean, I've never known anybody who stepped in poop and didn't realize it and tracked it through the entire house.
No. What's worse is having one of your animals do it in the house and then have the Roomba automatically go off.
Oh gosh, yeah, my sister's Roomba's done that. Anyway,
it's not fun. Anyway,
links. There are links for both of our amazing sponsors in the show notes comments section before our guests realize what they've gotten themselves into and decide to leave.
Exactly.
Well, one of them's been here before, so they
know. Two of them have been there before. Ben's the new guy. Exactly. All right. So I want to remind you guys that if you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and click subscribe, because that is going to give us the opportunity to share more awesome live shows with you and weekly interviews that come out every Friday morning. And in case you haven't seen it, we also have a Patreon page where you can join us at patreon.com/FSF podcast. You can go there and catch all the behind the scenes stuff, and you guys can get a lot of cool stuff. Patreon's a place to go. We've got 5 different levels of membership there. You can from $1 to $40, and each one of them has gradual perks and opportunities for loot and all that kind of fun stuff. And another former guest checking in, Rena Freeman Watts. Hello, Rena.
Hello.
Glad you could catch us over on the LinkedIn. So we've got some really awesome guests waiting for us in the wings. Very excited to have them. Now, a couple of them you've seen on our show before. We're going to first bring in the new guy, because, well, he's new to us, but not new to you. He is John Peterson. Hello, John.
Oh, hi.
So glad to be here. Wow, what have I gotten myself into? I am now wondering, just sitting in the green room, what have I gotten myself into?
Wonderful stories from your therapist.
So, like, the monkey cult thing. So it's coffee, or is it bourbon, or is it – it's coffee, but there's, like –
Right. They have, so right now they have 2 flavored versions of their coffee. They've got the bourbon chocolate chip, which is my favorite. If you're a bourbon fan, it's got enough bourbon flavoring without being overbearing, and it's got just a hint of chocolate to it. So it's perfect. And then the, I'm not a big rum or coconut fan, but actually the toasted coconut rum is actually pretty darn good too. So yeah, so check that out.
Have they considered making the bourbon, but it is overbearing? Because I might actually be into that.
I'll bring it up.
With a single coffee bean in it.
Oh, you know.
No, it's like it's like the LaCroix drinks where it's pretty much somebody just whispered the fruit flavor in the other room.
Seriously. I'll bring that up at our next partner meeting. So
please do.
All right, we'll do. Say John Peterson recommended this, and by golly, I think it's a good idea.
I just want like bourbon flavored coffee beans.
All right. And the next couple of guys who are waiting in the wings are our returning guests who have been here before. We're very excited and happy to bring back Sam Witwer and Kyle Newman.
Hello. Kyle. Oh my God, Kyle.
I just see the spinning wheel of death for Kyle.
It's
Kyle, no. You're too young. It exists,
but.
Well, I was watching in the his image in the background in the green room. Like you guys, we're gonna move. There he goes. He'll be back in a minute. So yeah, he'll be back. But yeah, he was stuck. I thought he was just like busy there reading an email for a moment. I'm like, oh, he's reading. It'll be fine. Apparently not.
He's a busy guy, actually. Kyle is.
That's right.
He's so young and had so much hope, so much life ahead of him.
All right. So hey guys, let's go ahead and get started. When Kyle gets here, we'll just bring him right back in. And so very, very grateful to have you both here tonight. Now, our John, our producer, who's in the yellow shirt, John, has reached. There you go. Then we've got black sweater, John. So that way we can differentiate. Now,
by the way, your John. Hey, thank you for displaying Saga Edition and Revised Core Rules behind you, man. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I've been playing that since early 90s.
Wait. What? That wasn't called Revised Core Rules. What was that called? It was just called the Star Wars game. West End Games came out with was the first one that had the color printing. Right, and that was a big deal back then for role-playing game books. But then, there it is. What do they call that?
This is Second Edition Revised and Expanded.
Second Edition, right. Revised Core Rules was Wizards of the Coast after that, before Saga Edition. Thank you very much. Awesome.
Yeah. No problem.
Well, the one that's in the front there, John, that's the book that we play out of, right? On our our monthly game.
Yep.
Yeah. Nice. So the second Monday of every month, we play a Star Wars RPG, and so that's what actually got me interested, and it was kind of like my gateway into RPGs, because before that game, I had never played. I had never, as a kid, never sat down and played D&D. So it was my gateway drug.
It only takes one.
You grew up deprived, is what I'm hearing. You didn't, in a situation of total deprivation. I'm so sorry.
In rural Michigan, it happens.
You're probably not wrong on that. Most of my friends, when I was growing up, thought role-playing games were for nerds. Was like, yeah, that's what I am. And so they didn't want to play with me. They were more interested in going hunting, fishing, that kind of stuff. So,
but rural Michigan, that's like hotspot D&D. I mean, that's, the home of one of the most famous people in D&D history. Like, at least it's where he went to college, Mr. James Dallas Egbert III, right? He was East Lansing, Michigan.
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
it was Tim had never played, and I'm like, you know what, guys? We should stream a game and introduce Tim to the game. And then we bought Tim his very first set of dice, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was very...
Got him dice. Got him a little...
It was a special moment for all of us.
It's so great. So I play a B2 battle droid. And Tim, who are you?
I'm a heavy clone trooper that's gone MIA.
Oh, you guys get along fine then.
Oh, it's so great.
We're bestest of friends.
Okay, but the battle droid is also wearing parachute pants and a pirate hat.
Pirate hat, yeah.
It's a very serious
My name is Scurvy. Nice. SCR-V.
Parachute pants. I miss parachute pants. I remember wearing parachute pants when I was like 10, and there we were at a, I guess like a tennis club or something like that. And I fell into the hot tub. Don't ask me why. There was a hot tub in the sort of bathroom or locker room area, and the parachute pants held the air inside. So my legs just went poof.
Wait, a giant hand has appeared in place of Kyle. Oh, no, it's actually
Kyle. Oh, my God, it's Kyle.
It's a random Kyle sighting. Hello, Kyle.
Right. What's up, guys?
Hello. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, just fine.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was watching everybody in the green room, and then suddenly, as soon as it was time to introduce us, Chrome just cracked.
It just could not handle the amount of awesome that is happening over here.
It just could not. Look at this display. Look at this gathering. Wow. Thanks for having us on. Sorry I'm late.
Yeah. No. Hey, you're right on time. Sam was telling a story. So
just to say that parachute pants were more airtight than you thought they were, you know, so that I'm sure that if I was skydiving in parachute pants, they'd look amazing. If you put them in a situation where the air needs to be trapped inside, they kind of balloon up. So I'm assuming that if you were on the International Space Station wearing parachute pants and they jettisoned you out the airlock, it would probably look amazing. You would look like MC Hammer, too legit to have a decaying orbit. It would be amazing.
It'd be like putting a straw in a bag of Lay's chips. There's just enough air in there for like a few hours.
Yeah. I think there is definitely a survival horror space game that where parachute pants keeps you alive. Well, for a few
crap, minutes John's
more.
Taking notes.
No.
He's also our GM, so we really don't, you know, he's our game master. We really don't need him getting extra hints here, Sam.
It is funny because whenever I fail like a stealth check, I always blame it on the of the parachute pants.
They did make that sound. They totally made that sound. Yeah.
That or corduroy, we're going to be your dead giveaways. So yep.
Yeah, but the parachute pants, corduroys were never cool. The parachute pants, though, back in the 80s, it was like, dude,
you're not wrong.
Someone walked in with parachute pants. That person should be paid attention to. That's a cool.
Typically with the droids parachute pants, though, we are just using them for smuggling.
Yeah. Well, you can smuggle oxygen inside them.
Yeah. You can.
True.
You can smuggle aerodynamic drag in them. It's really good.
Oh, geez.
So should we call them the rest stream. Of our party though? Because I feel like the rest of our party needs to be appreciated as well. Like,
you want to talk about Edna?
I don't want to talk about Edna.
The
no.
Golden Doodle Wookiee.
Yes, Edna, the Golden Doodle Noble Wookiee, who is the money in the face of the operation. But is also
the entire group.
But is also traveling under the pretending that she's a slave to the Trandoshan when she's not. But she's using it as her like get out of jail free card.
I like how Sam's eyebrows immediately go up with that, and you're like,
"Yep."
He's like, "Yeah, I don't know how
I know
that
what
works.
They're saying. I know what they're saying. I get what they're saying."
So, I know you know. That's not a problem.
And then John, right. What about Udex?
Udex is he's actually from another podcast called Growing Up Skywalker, played by our friend Sam. Udex is like he's a Fringer scout character with levels in tech specialist and a couple of other things. I haven't checked his character sheet in a while. I should probably do that. But he fixes everything when he's not busy crashing swoops.
Exactly.
Fun. All right, so funny because I think I have a higher mechanics and use computer check than him, but he's always possible. The first one there jamming a screwdriver into something. Oh, we lost Kyle again.
Bye, Kyle.
He's gone.
He's
gone.
Back.
Oh, there he's we back. Go. Okay. Yay.
He's back again. All right. So now that while we have all three of you on the screen and before we're Kyle goes away again, let's talk about your guys' book and the reason why you guys are here tonight. So you have a brand new book that's come out for D&D. Called Lore and Legends, which John is holding up there. Our John, yellow shirt John. And these are the books that we're talking about. We've got Lore and Legends, and also I've been checking it out on Amazon. You guys have this really super cool collector's edition, the black cover, the black and gold there, which I was
that's the one I pre-ordered and I'm waiting for it.
Yeah, it's
you
it's
are
pretty
the man.
Looking.
That's a good book. That's coming November 28th. That one is
What's great about that one is it's everything in the original book, just like we did with Art and Arcana. There was a special edition. This one's got a slide-out dice tray. It's a slip case. It has different art on the outside. It has different art on the book cover itself inside by a D&D famed artist, Hydro74. It's got a commemorative dice, which is only available in the set. It's just this golden glitter D&D icon dice. And it has what everybody wants is this full map of 5e Faerûn, which indicates via icons where all of the key adventures and events kind of took place. So if you've played through everything since 2014, you're going to be able to track the locations and where the hotspots are on the planet. So that's, and it actually captures some other areas beyond, which is cool. So that's an awesome set. If you have the money and you're like a completist, that's definitely the one to pick up, but you can't go wrong with either. And a Barnes & Noble version too, which if you're into chasing other covers, Barnes & Noble has one out as well with an alternate cover, different colors. And so we give you options just like just for collectors.
I heard about the Barnes & Noble edition and I was immediately sad about it because my wife used to work at Barnes & Noble, so I could have gotten that on discount, but she doesn't work there anymore.
Kyle and I hit a couple of Barnes & Noble here in L.A. We hit the Burbank one and the, what was it, the Americana and Glendale one. Yep. And we signed copies and put them in the shelf with after the knowledge left, of the show. So
I went to Studio City and signed some more. And they said, you're welcome to come by there. Yeah. And we do have, we have Lore and Legends now, but we have another book coming November 7th. And I'm sure Sam and I will try and drive around, and John is going to be in town.
Yeah.
Oh, no, John won't be in town for that, but Michael, Sam's brother, will be. So we're going to drive around and hit some more Barnes & Noble.
We like to sign copies and put them at the stores to have people go out.
They put little stickers on them. They author signed.
They do put a sticker that says the author signed it, right? So this isn't.
We're going to do that, too, if you're in the L.A. area and you're hot for some of these books. That's very cool. Be on the lookout.
And you're talking about the new Heroes Feast book, correct?
Yeah. That one's November 7th. Yeah.
Can I – so – I know this is my whole thing. I went to culinary school. I was a cook for many years. I have literally made every recipe in the first book. I heard about the new Heroes Feast, and I was immediately like, I'm getting it. The moment I found out about it, I'm like, pre-order. So
that's amazing. So let's excited. Break some more news. There's going to be a Heroes Feast cooking show coming November. So for people who love D&D and cooking and they want to expand upon everything that's in the Heroes Feast, you're going to be sampling some recipes from Heroes Feast 2. And we may or may not be guests, John and Michael and I, since it's based on the first one. And I'm sure if we do more, Sam's going to be in the second season. It's 20 episodes, 1 hour long. And wow. If you love D&D and cooking, that's the show for you.
I will awesome. Have my face glued to the screen that entire time. So thank you for that.
Yay.
Where can we watch this? Because I'm also going to now make the kid watch it.
I'm going to make a note on where this is.
So what are the details?
It's still TBD, I think. It's still to be announced where it will be aired, but it's coming soon, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Our five-year-old is currently on a cooking show kick. And so if I can get her to watch a D&D-based cooking show, I'm going to. I can only watch Is It Cake so many times.
It's really fun. It's really fun. There's not as much mystery as Is It Cake? And it's not as good as that cutting open that the Peruvian alien Is It Cake? But it's pretty good.
So, Anna, as soon as we get any more information or things, we'll make sure that we post that on our socials and we'll include that later if and when we get that. So just
and stay welcome tuned. To our live show, Anna.
Yes, Anna. Welcome. So, so let's talk about Lore and Legends. Now, this, of course, is a Dungeons & Dragons themed book, and this is not the first one that you guys have written together. There was also Art and Arcana, of course, the Heroes Feast. So what was the inspiration for this book, for Lore and Legends? How did this one come about?
John, you want to take that?
Sure. I mean, it came pretty organically out of Art and Arcana, actually. I mean, so we did this book and, we could go into our whole backstory of how the Avengers assembled around this, right? But I mean, from my perspective, I'm just like a D&D history geek, and it was Kyle and Mike and Sam who invited me to come in and help do some research and put it together. But when it came out, like, it turned out people were super interested. in like the history of the brand. We were kind of looking back at 40, 45 years then in 2018. And, you know, we obviously there was some interest in us doing future projects with 10 Speed Press, who's a part of Penguin Random House, who put out Art and Arcana. And one of the things that came out of that was, of course, the first Heroes Feast. But, you know, there was also this notion, hey, we should look at the what happened. Like that, you know, since 2014, how did this going on 50-year-old brand in our digital era suddenly become this massive phenomena, larger than it ever was at what previously what its peak was its peak in the 1980s? And like, what were the factors that led to it becoming as big as it was? And along the way, doesn't it look great too? And shouldn't we like feature all these new visuals that had come out since really the window closed on us for Art and Arcana in like 2017? So, you know, we wanted to kind of capture the 5e era, this like, you know, 2014 to present era. And that's what we set out to do. And unfortunately, due to COVID and supply chain problems and everything else, it ended up being like a little later coming out than we originally thought it would. But think about it, like it really started, you know, basically after Art and Arcana came out from an interest in doing that incredible story of why it is that this brand got as big as it did in the late 2010s.
We were able to cover everything kind of just barely up to Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes. I think that was the early art we got at the end of Art and Arcana. And there was no perspective yet on 5e, and the phenomenon was still kind of unfolding. So looking at this book over the past couple of years, especially considering, you know, that they're about to enter a new phase in 2024, there's a major anniversary. It felt like also the perfect time, and we had some perspective, enough perspective on it where we could then make some observations and some, you know, decisions about what we think were the contributing factors. And it's not just one thing. That's the interesting thing about this. It's not just that they put out a tremendous rule set that was reverent to the past. It's not just that it was built upon the feedback of hundreds of thousands of fans. It's that there was these intersecting things going on in pop culture and in gaming. And, you know, the past 20 something years, you've seen Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, fantasy is everywhere. Fantasy dominates mm-hmm. the award shows. And so everything that was taboo or weird or nerdy was suddenly mainstream. And so people had the vernacular, they had the interest, the demystification of D&D. There's a lot of taboos and misinformation about it. And it seemed complicated. It's math based. It's very literary based. It requires performance. There's a lot of things which are roadblocks for people. And suddenly you go, wait, you just get around with friends and tell a story? Mm-hmm. That sounds awesome. You know, it's like, if you like charades, if you like storytelling and reading, if you like fantasy, if you like board games, if you like tabletop, all these things kind of contribute into one, you know, strange new form of entertainment, and it brings people around a table, you know, and it creates little families. And if you know, it's like, it's getting together with your friends. It's like, if you're into fantasy football, but you're also into like, you know, a game night, it's like kind of like all the same. And now there's these tools like D&D Beyond and digital ways to play, and also then flourished through the pandemic because you weren't impeded from playing. It actually allowed you to play in a new way with these digital tool sets and virtual maps and things like that. So people could like meet online and still keep it going. So there were so many interesting things. Then you've got Stranger Things and Rick and Morty and all these other things talking about D&D, which then put it on a pedestal. So all that's just started to develop over the past, you know, few years. And so the book really explores all of those things. So it's not just saying, you know, it did it because it's a good game set. It really was all these magical things happening in the zeitgeist that made this thing a phenomenon, an analog game really successful in a digital era. And people just want to put their pens down. I mean, their phones down and pick up a pencil and get together. So.
Yeah, I think that when we, you know, looking at it from now, we play a Star Wars RPG, but when awesome. We play, I think it's, you know, we average about 2.5-3 hours each time we sit down. And I don't think, other than messaging between us, you know, I don't think I have my phone in my hand for any of it because I'm too busy talking with my friends and doing things with my friends. And it's well more of a like you were just saying, it's well more of a community-based game and getting together with friends than I ever thought it was, that I ever gave it credit for just because of the way that I grew up and who I grew up around and all these different things. So I never participated in any type of RPG. So for me, this was great, you know, because an RPG to me up until this point was like, you know, Final Fantasy. That was like, you want to play an RPG? Sure, I got Final Fantasy. We can do that. Yeah, let's do it. So
it's also great how like accessible D&D has become and how just widespread it is. I mean, one of my regular games that I played during the pandemic was between me and my wife in Florida, a friend of ours in New York, another friend in Georgia, and someone in England. And we were all different. Like, most of us were different lives, different jobs. Everything was crazy. But then once every Friday, we came together and we just hung out and had fun. For the most part, people were on their phones just to use D&D Beyond, but there was no, like, I was the DM for that, and I specifically remember, like, looking over the screen and going, oh, people are actually looking at me. They're paying attention. They're doing things. Because even if they're not immediately in the scene, they're all engaged because it's just fun.
Yeah. And John always talks about like these books having to work with the sound off. And that's something we're really proud of. And we spend a lot of time collectively. We get our together like a think tank and we really curate because there's tons of art out there. It's more than you would imagine. This book has over 900 images in it. And we're talking about, we have to go through tens of thousands of images more to cull it down and then look at all the ways it touched upon popular culture and pick the right ones to indicate, here's where it got on, you know, it's on Community, it's Big Bang Theory, and it's William Shatner's playing, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Kevin Smith, and then they got David Harbour from Stranger Things and Jack Black playing on the D&D stream. And you're like, then you've got Critical Role phenomena. It's all these things, and you have to like curate it and tell the story. And we really think tank it through and try to make it intelligent so you could look at, understand how it's unfolding, the drama of it, the ups and downs, and without even reading a word. But also the story itself is really fascinating too. So it has like a dual purpose, when you're going through the book, but even as a player, even as a DM, I played almost every adventure in 5e, but you're not privy to seeing all the art. Maybe you don't go down that road. Maybe you don't go in that building. You don't reach that basement or that dungeon. And even if you do, you don't see all the art. You don't see all the characters. And even if you're a DM, your players don't even take you there. And even if you have the time, you can't play everything. This book collects the phenomenon into these 416 pages and distills it down to like these, each book gets its moment. Like it's a theatrical release. That's how they released it. And that's what was
the artwork is so impressive that I think for the first time, players can really appreciate how lacking their dungeon master is at describing these extraordinary worlds. Because
let's be honest, thanks. As a forever DM.
Yeah,
for the most part.
And I'm a DM. I'm pretty good with that stuff. But I wave my hands around a lot, and that makes it more exciting when you wave your hands. Yeah, exactly. But now, for the first time, you can actually see what the hell they were talking about and see that they really didn't do it justice.
It was funny. I've gotten my hands on the book once. Like, John got it Friday in the mail, and he's like, hey, so look what I got in the mail. And I grabbed it, and I ran off with it, and he practically tackled me to get it back with the, no, you can't have this, it's mine. I'm like, but I want to look at it.
D&D, it really is about trying to exclude people from enjoying things.
It's so funny, though, is that he's been sitting in the corner of our living room looking through it and then giggling. And I'm like, what? He goes, there's a SpongeBob picture. I'm like, what?
Yeah, but it's best to deprive someone of what, of it when they're enjoying it the most. That's when you have to strike and take it.
Now, what I got out of all of that was something I can use in future interviews. I'll be waving my hands around a little more wildly, and I'm going to tell everybody that Sam Witwer told me to. So
you told me to stop doing that.
I did tell you to stop doing that.
You told me to stop doing that. No,
as a filmmaker, you spend more time pitching than you do making anything. Your life is 95% rejection, but so you have to go and gesticulate and animate and get people's attention and pretend you know what you're talking about, and P.T. Barnum the hell out of it. So you do use your hands a lot. Yeah. And it is the skill dungeon masters can get attention. You got to snap your fingers and tell somebody to get out of their fantasy draft. And,
But that too is, that's a big part of the story of Legends and Lore, or Lore and Legends. Legends and Lore, Lore and Legends, Legend and Lore. We can never keep it straight. As we were developing it, the name of this project changed like 50 times. The book is in fact called Lore and Legends. But a big part of the story of Lore and Legends is how many creatives who went on to work in Hollywood, who went on to work in technology, went to work in like all of these amazing spheres of nerddom that now rule the world, you know, grew up with role playing, grew up with D&D and kind of learned the craft of storytelling, as, you know, Sam could tell you about growing up with his brother and being a DM, and look where that's put both of them.
Exactly. Quick question here from one of our viewers. So I'd love to hear about the role that evil AR art is having on RPGs. I like that GMs can show you more of what's in his or her head.
Well, AI is a tool.
It's Wait, not evil AI? Or because an evil AI is going to create a different art than a good AI.
Are you talking about Roku's Basilisk? No, evil AI is, it's a tool. We can use it incorrectly or correctly.
Sure.
In the world of art, I know it's threatening, but to get philosophical, I think technology, each layer of technology that we achieve is just the culmination of what we've dreamed and willed to happen. Star Trek gave us a vision of what you could have, a tricorder in your pocket, and then we will manifest it, make it happen. We can't be Luddites about it, but we do have to harness it in an intelligent way. I don't think it can replace the artist. And D&D, there was a little, you know, thing about it. One of the books, an artist used AI to enhance a piece of art. And I know the official, you know, company took a stance, was like, we're not going to do that anymore. They want it handmade. And that's it's a good stance. The same thing, it's invading film. And they, obviously there's a strike going on. Film actors, film writers, film directors all had their issues with the studios and how that can infringe upon the storytelling process. Who's doing the writing? The computer? Is that intellectual property? What happens when computer generates the art? And a lot of, look, D&D art, you could type it in and go, you've got a Sarac and he's, you know, towering over this innocent victim on the floor about to disintegrate him and blah, blah, blah. And then you'd spit out a piece of art. But do you want that? Or do you want the Tyler Jacobson version? Or do you want, you know, some other exciting artist? I don't know. It could be a tool if you're a DM and you need to whip up something fast, but I want to show this town I homebrewed and show my fans what it looks like. And it's got every building's upside down and there's, you know, lizard people with pink, you know, scales, and you want to whip that out and you don't have time to hire an artist. I'm sure there's a tool for that if you want the visual. I don't see D&D letting that infringe upon their official published art. And I think that's something they're very, you know, serious about, and the fan community has kind of spoken about that. So I'm not sure what they want to know about it, but AI is dangerous, but I don't think it's inherently evil.
Okay. I think that's fair.
Right? I don't know. Anyone want to argue me? Let's go. I don't know.
I think that's a fair argument. I think anything, any tool in the wrong hands is a dangerous tool. It's all in how you use it, how you approach it. The internet can be dangerous if you use it wrong. So, I mean, this is just something else that's part of the internet.
And drugs can be bad if you use them wrong.
Right. So,
you know. Right.
So yeah,
drugs won't. Yeah. No. Everyone knows that if you use them right, it's great. Yeah. Fantastic.
I'm pretty sure it's an old blacksmith saying that the same hammer that forges the steel can break the bone.
I'm sitting here giving a bunch of flip answers. I'm going to point out that, like, there are a lot of artists around there who make extraordinary images, and you'd be surprised when you reach out and say, hey, I'd like to commission you and pay you this much money to give me a few images or some concepts of this and that. That I think is really satisfying. I've done that on several occasions for my RPGs. I've hired artists, and no, I don't do drugs. And but I have hired artists. And I think that's the way to do it. I think, you know, there's something personal about this whole thing, and you don't want to strip out too much of the personality out of the personal. That's my personal take on that. And I've worked with a lot of tools that one would call AI. I'm fascinated by the possibilities, but at the heart of it, at the beating heart of it, you got to have human beings in command of artistic expression, I think, you know, so...
Personally, I welcome our AI overlords. I mean,
it's true.
They can't do worse than we have.
Well, you know, here's the thing is, like, you know, there's some talk of, like, could you get an AI dungeon master? To which I would respond, I'll replace my players with AIs. I will get an AI for each player, and then I no longer have to deal with players anymore, and I can play, you know, D&D the way that it should be played. The
easiest scheduling ever.
But that's right.
Sure, well, I'm so sick of trying to Baldur's Gate.
I think
really is Baldur's Gate 3.
There's a lot of fear. That's the thing. There's a lot of fear around something because it is has so much potential, and there is with the all the incredible upside to it, like predictive cancer 3 years in advance, things like that. How it can, you know, solve stock market conundrums, and you can make all these, you know, financial conjectures. There's, you can trick a whole country into thinking, you know, media is real. There's a lot of danger with it, and that's why there's fear, and people are really good at letting, and I think we have to be a little fearful in order to project and anticipate what it could do to us, in order to create some basic parameters. But it's not like, it's not a genie you're putting back in the bottle. No, it is going to infiltrate every facet of every business, all economy. I don't think you're going to be seeing like AI judges making determinations, but it's going to be contributing to doctors and healthcare and predictive medicine. You're going to be seeing it. I know it's already infiltrated a lot of, you know, storytelling. People will use ChatGPT to break story. I'm sure it's going to be like, there's going to be a ChatGPT built like RPGs that the stories and the permutations are expressed based on what the computer has written down. There's going to be interest in a place for it. But again, it's about how we also regulate it in a sane way and not just a pure fearful way, because it is just another tool in the arsenal of storytellers or game designers.
Fair enough. I think those are all good answers. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's get back to your book here for a couple minutes yet. So you mentioned some of the things that people can look forward to in the book, but for each one of you, is there something in particular about the book that was special or important to you? Was it the history, the artwork, the story being told? Is there something that you're specifically fond of or proud of when it comes to this book?
Go for it, John.
I'm a bit of a history geek, so I kind of liked being able to go into where 5e kind of came from and what the conditions were that led to the process that kicked it off to this enormous playtest, and to kind of what the influences were that steered it in the directions it ended up going, and why ultimately those ended up being cool things. I mean, for me, it's all the little things, it's all the details, right? Like I think it's cool to look at draft stuff where the concept of advantage in D&D, advantage and disadvantage, where you roll 2d20s, where originally it was just like a +2 or -2 bonus. Mm-hmm. And it's like all the little kind of things that you can incrementally watch take shape that led to the system that we have today that's been so successful. Like I personally kind of like being able to explore that and explain it a bit.
Yeah. Okay.
I enjoy the fact that it's a little bit of a victory lap, because you can't deny that something really unexpected has happened here. Because if you go back to even when we were doing Art and Arcana, we're making this book, Art and Arcana, about the history of Dungeons and Dragons from the early 70s to modern day, and there wasn't really a feel that I had of like, oh, RPGs are here to stay, guys. We're on the tip of something amazing here. No. It was like, this is an archaic thing that may be gone in a few years. And, you know, I would eat up independent RPGs, and I would buy all these stuff. I have this huge RPG collection and all this stuff behind me. But there was definitely a feeling of like, I think this might be kind of on its way out, or it's going to find it's going to settle, and it's going to be in the niche that it's been in for decades, and it's going to stay there firmly because nothing else is going to let it escape. So to our shock, D&D has broken out of that box, and it's everywhere now, and it's gotten to a point where you can say quite unironically and with no shame, oh yeah, no, I got my D&D game tonight. And people are like, oh yeah, yeah, okay, cool. Rather than,
isn't that weird board game that's Satan?
You know?
Satanic.
Not about Satan.
I don't know why it's the church lady right there, but that's
right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's as a fan, it's like John's stuff too. I love reading John's stuff, what he uncovers and brings to the table. You're always learning something. That's why it's so great to work with people like Sam, Michael, and John. They all bring something new, and you're learning as you're working on the book. Like I'm always, every time we pass it through layers and stuff, we're always discovering, and John is always like unveiling something mind-blowing. And I think that, but you're watching something that Sam said has been around for a long time, that finally has come into its own. It was like an awkward teenager that's finally like, you know what? I'm in college. I found my stride. I am who I am, and accepted who it was. It's not trying to be video games like fourth edition. It's not like trying to fight against its parents like it was in the early days and reject its origins or borrow too much. You know, like early days, it had like the posters on the wall of everyone it idolized. You know, Lord of the Rings was still like what it loved. Now it's its own thing. It's its own art form. And fifth edition, it hit stride. And then you're watching pop culture hold a mirror back to it and go, oh, we love you. And we took something from you because you've seen video games and board games and all these other things have taken influence from it. And then you're watching storytellers like reaching out to people like Vince Vaughn and Craig Mazin and Ming-Na Wen and Jim Lee, who runs DC Comics. Like all these people that have been touched and influenced by Dungeons & Dragons are then able to point back its potency, like Dan and Dave from Game of Thrones, you know, contribute quotes. And you're like, all these people have very interesting perspectives on how it shaped them as showrunners, storytellers. And that's where we're at in 5e, where it's moved on enough from, you know, its inception, where there's generations of people that have been influenced. So watching that stuff rise to the surface and then being able to kind of curate the story, I think was cool. And then I did love, you mentioned that SpongeBob picture. That was one of the things I liked, because I'm like, this is so ridiculous that SpongeBob has a player's handbook cover and it's a reference to this. And if you know, you know, but it's SpongeBob and it's just so out there. I loved it when it was like touching on these outlandish other IPs and they were commenting on D&D and you're like, okay, this is how you know it's made it from Futurama to, you know, whether it's, you know, it was on Ghosts and all these different shows. It's like D&D has made it because everyone wants to talk about it. And I think that's what was cool to aggregate all that.
I mean, who talks about it in the foreword of this book?
Tom Morello.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that because, huge Rage fan. And anything that Tom Morello does with a guitar is, as far as I'm concerned, is just the shade of genius. And so I was like, holy crap. How did that happen? How did Tom Morello come to be the one to write the foreword in your book?
I texted him and said, dude, do you want to do it? And then literally within 2 minutes, he responded and was like, yes. And then the next day, I think hours later, he already sent it. He was like, oh my God, yes, I have to do this. I'm doing this. Like,
That's where, because there is a time where you reach out to someone like Tom Morello and you don't get such an enthusiastic yes or a quick yes. And these days it's just a different thing. We never would have guessed we would have been here. Never.
Yeah, it'd be like, does it make me look uncool if I say I'm into D&D? We're past that. Those stigmas have been shed. And
which I love.
You've got people like Tom Morello now, our public champions for it. And Tom, you know, brilliant guy, Ivy League, self-taught guitar. He even talks, you know, when we talked about stuff like how he's played probably D&D more than guitar, you know, these are crazy things. So you're right. It's a very eclectic group of people that are now happy and open to talk about their love of D&D.
It's very fun.
It's come into its own. It's a teenager that's no longer fighting against its parents. But there is that sort of that renaissance that's happened with it too, of all of the people who were like, I wanted to play this when I was younger and I couldn't. Hey, I'm going to play it now because I'm an adult and I don't have to listen to my parents saying, no, there's demons in that. You can't play that. Sorry, Mom, I know you're listening.
Yeah, that was a real obstacle, guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I was there when my entire D&D collection was disposed of because it was the devil. You know, that sucked, especially since what we were doing was something that was so socially good for us. You know, I shared this story on a Twitch stream recently because my brother was on with me, and I'll share it here. We had a grandfather that lived with us, and he was like a third parent to us. And when I first day of sixth grade for me, first day of third grade for my little brother, he died. And we were shocked, and we were absolutely not ready for that. And I remember having this sense of, well, I'm a lot older, so I somehow can handle this. But what about my little brother? How is he doing? Which was just, you know, I was sixth grade. Like I was devastated.
Typical older brother feeling though.
Yeah. And I remember asking my little brother, Michael, what do you want to do? what do you, you know, how, you know, and we were in my bedroom. What do you want to do? He said, and he through tears said, I want to play D&D. And I'm like, I remember asking, are you sure? And he says, I want to play D&D. So we invited the rest of the group over and we all played D&D in our bedroom. And we were able to escape while we were emotionally processing what happened mm-hmm. in our family. And it wasn't going to make it go away, but it was going to help us through this. And it kind of sucks that with that, we felt like, well, are we sort of dishonoring our grandfather? Are we doing something really bad right now? As if my brother said, you know, I want to do drugs or something. You know, it's like, no, we were doing something really socially valuable to us as people and learning how to get along, learning how to be friends with each other, learning how to work together and all these things that role-playing games are good at teaching younger mm-hmm. people. And yet all of the adults back in the day were just trying to throw monkey wrenches into it as much as they could. You know, it's very weird that, you know.
Well, that's a game for nerdy losers who don't have any friends, but you have to have friends. You have to have a social life to play this game.
Yeah.
Build that community to be able to communicate your thoughts and your feelings to other people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it teaches so many basic communication skills and so many basic group building skills. Like we've got a 5-year-old daughter and we've started playing, it's called Hero Kids with her. So it's the kids version of D&D where it's a much simpler math because they're little, but just watching the problem solving from this 5-year-old with the, well, mm-hmm. your friend fell down a hole. How are you going to get them out? Well, do I have a rope in my backpack? Yeah, you have a rope in your backpack. How are you going to make this work? Like watching that and realizing that is so fundamental to D&D, to RPGs in general, is you have to know how to work as a group. And I feel that that's something that so many adults need to know. And our parents were like, no, you don't need to play these games. But they taught us how to be people.
Mm-hmm. How dare you suggest critical thinking skills?
You know, that's the thing that's going on right now. You're seeing D&D being used in classrooms. You're seeing it mm-hmm. being used in therapy. It's mm-hmm. infiltrated prisons, and it gives people sanity. I'm working on a documentary as co-director on the history of Dungeons & Dragons for Hasbro and E1. John is also producing it. And there's interviewed gang people, talked to people, all walks of life that play this thing, and how it was a savior for them. You know, even Ta-Nehisi Coates talks about, you know, he learned about the transformative power of words with his brother, like sitting on the floor in his bedroom in you know, Baltimore. Like some people get that from novels, you know, and he got that from Dungeons and Dragons, and he goes and becomes this award-winning author. And so it's transportive, it's transformative, and it's used in all these different ways where like a young shy person maybe can't get out of their head or their themselves, but then they suddenly they're a wizard or a barbarian and they can open their mouth and they can try things and express things and then get comfortable with being themselves via a proxy, a fantasy proxy. So that's now people that the fears are stripped away and now people can look at it and go, oh wow, these are very unique things that didn't exist before 1974. John wrote another book, The Elusive Shift, which really traces the origins of role-playing and the terminology of role-playing. But this is all, these are really new concepts that had never been collected in this way, in a cohesive way. And it is like, it is a new art form. And that's, I think we're still seeing what it can be. But like you see video games try to do RPGs, you're talking about Final Fantasy, and you talk about all these other things. And now it's become, you know, prevalent, accepted. And I think we're only seeing the beginning of what it could be, especially as virtual reality and gaming evolves and you have the principles of D&D now being applied to it. Now you can actually bring more role playing to a video game. It's less, you're not less being railroaded, you know, more open world stuff. And
I mean, Baldur's Gate 3, is anybody else here play this? Anybody?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Playing BG3? Like
yep,
the degree absolutely. To which that is not railroaded, the degree to which you can attack like any situation through 15 different possible attacks. We're mm-hmm. having seen this, but this, I'm telling you, man, it's giving the tabletop experience one of the first runs for the money that I've seen.
Well, you know, with Baldur's Gate, the thing with that they really nailed the Baldur's Gate 3 is that sense of experimentation. you know? I mean, you just said that in so many words, but basically, yeah, that's that sense of, I'm going to try stuff. Do you think this might work? Oh my God, something's happening. You know, like it's really well done. Well done for them.
From my point of view of playing for several, like playing D&D for several years and playing other like RPG, like video games before, this is the first one that actually just feels like I'm playing D&D. This is the one where I'm like, hoping so hard to beat the DC of a persuasion check, or hope that I have a magic item I could feed Gale so he doesn't leave my party.
Well, that's the other thing is that they he's eating.
He's gonna explode. I hear. Does he explode? I haven't seen him explode.
The fact that they put the mechanics of D&D front and center, and that there are these dice rolls, and you see what your modifiers are, and you see what this you know what I mean. Like, it's a good job of explaining how that all works. So I would imagine it's doing a good thing in terms of drawing people toward the game, because it's teaching the game, you know?
Well, and it's teaching mechanics and, you know, 5e mechanics. If you don't know the difference between an action and a bonus action and reaction and things like that, you will not be able to escape Baldur's Gate 3 without learning exactly how all those things work. And this feeds back to another point I think we make in Lore and Legends, that, you know, part of the reason why D&D has become accessible today is because a generation grew up with video games. It's true, that taught you things like there's hit points, there's experience points, there are levels. And like, those used to be a barrier to entry. Like back in the 80s, those were new ideas. And like, you had to, you cannot grow up today. No matter how sheltered, if you have access to electronic devices, you understand what experience and levels and hit points and things like that are. And like that is one of many factors, I think, that has helped, in fact, the tabletop renaissance happen.
Which, you know, like, John, we had conversations early in the Art and Arcana days where we were like, doesn't it kind of suck that D&D mechanics are everywhere, but no one really understands it's from D&D, and they never really will understand that it's from D&D. No one's going to get how influential this little game that they, you know, that they made in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and handmade these boxes and sent them out. No one's going to understand how transformative that was to society. They're never really going to get it, are they? Now here we are, like, oh, I guess they get it.
Unless we write a book that explains to people how influential. Yes,
that was sort of one of our the things we were trying to accomplish. Exactly,
and it thread a needle. That's what we really, you know, talk about too. Is that I think if this came a little earlier, it might not have worked in the 70s, and it came a little later and had to compete with the video game explosion that started to happen in the later 70s and early 80s. You know, it hit in the right 10-year window, and some of it was because of, you know, Lord of the Rings and fantasy renaissance, but it was built upon wargaming, and that I was, yeah, so right it's away. Unique.
I want to point out that, and again, this is neither here nor there. This is just a random observation, but me and my group have been playing Mold Bay Edition 1981 Basic D&D for years now. We started during the pandemic. We're like, hey, I want to do something kind of dumb. It's just not going to work very well because it's an old, outmoded version of D&D, and they didn't know what they were doing back then, and they were just kind of going with what Gary said, even though Gary was a visionary, but like, he was just kind of skin of his teeth, seat of his pants, all this stuff. Turns out those early versions of D&D are incredibly distinctive and interesting. Like, you think the things are all arbitrary in the way that the whole game works, and you start realizing, oh no, it's not. Like, this is very deliberate, the way that this game is laid out, and it hit a sweet spot. Like, the original editions of the game, the Basic D&D, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, they really, really, really hit a sweet spot. So I, you know, another thing about fifth edition is I'm glad that they have some respect for what came before, because, you know, fourth edition didn't necessarily respect, I'm trying to figure out the right thing to say, Jared. I'm looking at John's face. What's your stuff?
It respected it, you know, mistakes were made, but okay. It was not from a position of dis. That's I guess.
Sure. Right. Okay. Gotcha. Thank you for saving me from that.
I would put it as they were trying something new and it didn't work.
Yeah.
I played one game of fourth edition years before fifth. And It was my first time playing. I wanted to play D&D my entire life. I got maybe an hour into the session. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. And it is just bad. Granted, that's mostly because the Dungeon Master also didn't know what they were doing.
Didn't wave his hands around enough. He could not get your attention.
Didn't do this enough. Yeah. But then I finally let myself play D&D 5th edition later.
Mm-hmm.
I love how 5th edition can get complicated, but there's literally no barrier to entry aside from being able to read. Or even having someone read it to you.
Right.
Aside from that, everything is very clear-cut. It's very simplified, but you can make it complex if you want. And that's been it. Like, 5th edition has been my D&D. And it's been so great.
Our local game store is actually starting Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday.
Starting Sunday, they're doing an ABCs of D&D just with the, hey, pay $10 for a table fee. We will provide a GM. They will walk you through character creation. They will show you how this is done. You want to learn how to play D&D? Come learn how to play D&D. And then after that, they're starting another group for more advanced players, just for same concept with the bring your character. We've got a dungeon master. We've got a story. Come play with us. And it's like, this is great. This store opened, what, 6 months ago?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And maybe
like,
one
it's really
day,
cool to have a literal brick and mortar game store within walking distance of my house.
That's pretty great. That's awesome.
They've taken so much of their money.
Well, okay, so when you take the 5-year old in and she comes home with you, Mom, I got you a present, and I'm like, oh cool, what is it? And it's Zelda, and it's a little amiibo. And I'm like, I love you. I love that you found that for me. And then she goes, Dad bought me Legos. I'm like, oh boy.
It's just being a good dad.
Oh, sorry, Tim. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. I was just saying, I wish is, you know, one of the things that I've enjoyed most about doing this podcast is having people come on the show and helping expose me to things that I wasn't familiar with, or and helping my knowledge of certain things grow over time. I wish that I could go back and redo a couple of our early interviews that we had done. Our very first interview was with a gentleman named Guy Sklanders, who runs a fantastic YouTube page called How to Be a Great GM. And we had him on, and he might have well have been talking in hieroglyphics to me, because at that point I knew absolutely zero about D&D and role-playing games, other than, you know, what some of the stuff that Sam mentioned earlier with the Satanic Panic and stuff like that. I was just like, oh, that's that devil game. Yeah, okay. So I wish I could go back and understand that a little bit more and have a better perspective on that conversation than what I had then. And then we also interviewed James L. Ward, who was also known as Dromage, from Gary Gygax. And again, he came on the show, and it was just like, you know, I was lost with half of what he was saying. And so that's one of the things I have really enjoyed about this journey going through podcasting. Now, I'm not anywhere claiming that I'm a RPG master or anything over here, but I do enjoy the game, and I'm wanting to learn how to play other versions other than just the Star Wars version that I've played, because I've enjoyed this one. So in my mind, well, if I'm enjoying this one, I'm going to enjoy this one over here. Okay, then let's try that other one too. And, you know, because now that opens me up to more people to play with. So why not? So
I have so many games that I want to throw your way that I haven't
even loved. Well, that's the wonderful thing, right? The other thing is the rising tide does something awesome, or whatever it is. And the fact is, as that Dungeons & Dragons becoming mainstream, I mean, the wealth of RPGs that are coming out and the things that people are experimenting with, it's just kind of amazing. I mean, you know, playing there's so many interesting mechanics that I have read and or played with in the past few years. I never would have thought that there would be enough muscle in the RPG space and enough interest to where you get all these incredible games. So it's that rising tide that does good stuff.
Lifts all ships. Yeah.
Lifts it up.
It's also just an absolute wildfire, because once someone gets the D&D bug, they're going to spread it. Their passion will spread it to other people. I remember my first time playing D&D as a dungeon master. I bought the starter set. I had the Mines of Phandelver pamphlet. It's not even a book. It's like 30 pages. I spent 3 hours with my group building their characters. The next day, I planned for maybe 4 hours of content. We played for 12 hours straight.
Whoa.
Left, slept for 8 hours, and came back and played for another 12 hours. Yeah. It was insane. I literally built a WWE like wrestling ring for them out of cardboard, pencils, and shoelace. I spent days hand like transferring the little maps you have in the pamphlet onto big gridded like poster paper because I didn't have a means of printing out that big of a map to put the minis on it. And that sparked both my wife and my little brother running their own games. My little brother, I'm now playing a character in his D&D game that he spent years planning, and I am so excited about my character. I'm so happy. And then with my wife, we started playing another RPG called Goat Crashers, which is so funny. It's a D6 system, and it's just you get to be a goat. And you're crashing a party. That's the whole plan.
Goat crashing.
I need to play that.
I can see if Mimi can run it for you guys.
And no matter how people feel about D&D, like D&D has opened the floodgates, so people are now okay with playing a role-playing game. And then you can go play games like the Goat Game, or you can go play Star Wars role-playing game. I mean, my entry point was my older brothers played D&D, but I did a little bit, but I really got into it because of the old Star Wars West End game. And then got into GURPS and Ninja Turtles and played D&D. So it wasn't just D&D, but D&D was the one that broke.
It was the gateway drug. It was,
and even, it's the same thing. Now people dabble a little bit in D&D. You know what? I want to try this. Or I didn't know that you could do this. Or it lets people in and realize, okay, this is a thing I can do and I'm okay with it. Now, which is the system, which is the themes or the stylings that are right for me, or you might try all different ones. And that's what's great about it, about how you feel about D&D. I just think 5e is exquisite. It's easy entry point for people. It's streamlined in such a nice way where you get past that barrier and suddenly the world feels like it opens up to you. You're like, oh, I can do this. Phandelver that's a religious experience playing that box set. You take people through that, and I know they just put out Shattered Obelisk, which is like, you know, further exploring it. And if you haven't played, that's probably, I would say, to pick up that. Play through the beginning because you're getting the Phandelver starter set, but you're also getting more. Because after that, we're like, now what? You know, and you kind of have to, like, pick up and go somewhere else after level 5. But now with that book, which just came out in September, you can just play. You can keep going. So that's my recommendation if you're just getting into it. It's the starter set and more, and it's freaking awesome.
I wonder if I can get my old party back together to continue the story. That's a thing I've been looking to.
Worth a try. Should.
And cook food from Heroes Feast.
There you go. I yes. One of the things I did for many of my games is prior to the pandemic when people would actually be able to come over, I would literally make a whole meal for them, snacks, drinks, a main course and everything. So when Heroes Feast came out, that was the first thing I did was I made like 6 things out of the book. And I'm like, hey, we're playing D&D. Come over. I have food.
Amazing. That's so good.
I need that book because we've done food out of the Skyrim cookbook for D&D. And that was a lot of fun, too.
I mean,
you need to go full D&D. You will love it. We really tried to go for in-world lore as much as we can. Think of what's really techniques and ingredients that are readily available to that particular peoples, and also regionally, would they have access to it? You know, there's just, you know, you put in the basic parameters. You know, if these peoples live underground. They're not going to have livestock. They're not going to have this type of vegetation. They're going to, you know, operate off this and this, and really build the larders out like that. And then, you know, research it based on, it's almost like you're researching fiction. You know, you're going into these old novels, comics, you know, setting guides, modules, and you're really pulling out, you know, random information. Maybe an author just threw a name out there, like a random dish at a table, you know, in an inn or something. And then you're trying to make it real, you know. And I think that was the fun of it, is like giving it expanded history. And there'd been stuff before, and like the leaves from the End of the Last Home and books like that regarding Dragonlance. And there was some FR stuff prior, you know, Ed Greenwood, you know, who brainstormed and dreamed up the Forgotten Realms, put out some stuff and talked about it. You know, it's really like picking up where those guys, those, you know, legends kind of started and then expanding it out. So it could be immersive, because what we crave as D&D players, what you crave as an RPG player, is immersion. You want to take your two-dimensional experience, make it three or four-dimensional. And if you can add and activate other senses, that's why now more than ever, you're seeing people use sounds and scents. And now we're using, you know, tastes at the table. So if you're at an elven, you're in the Feywild, you know, the new book is taking you to Shadowfell, Feywild is taking you to the Rock of Brawl and Spelljammer. Yeah. You know, you're getting all these locales, and then you can have food that's germane to that to then contribute to the story, you know? So that's what I think is great. It's not just like, it's a gimmick. We're like, this is a way to add that dimension that people crave at their table beyond Mountain Dew and Cheetos. It's like, mm-hmm. you could have like something that elves would really eat at a feast.
I feel like this is a dangerous thing for me though.
No,
I don't know. With what my characters have done in the past, I don't know if this is safe or not.
Okay, you got it.
I had a gnome character who, I love this character so much. She found a dead half elf.
Oh no.
And turned it into jerky.
Oh no.
To feed to the paladin.
Why the paladin?
Because war crimes.
Like, I would just randomly offer the paladin character jerky and never told him where it was from.
He's watching now, he knows.
Yeah.
But that was like 4 years ago, it's fine.
One day he finds he has lost his powers and his favor with his god, and he wants to know why.
Right.
And this is how Lord Soth was born.
Why have I fallen? Well, I mean, that was also before he got blown up, so. Mm-hmm. He got too close to Fireball. Bad things happened.
It does happen.
Now, John or Tim, I don't know if you can bring up a comment that came up a while ago. It was talking about the taverns on TikTok.
Mm-hmm. This one here?
Yeah. Those have been amazing. Because some of them have used recipes from Heroes Feast to make stuff for their channels. Things like Quincy's Tavern. Absolutely amazing, because it's... Every D&D adventure starts with y'all meet in a tavern. Mm-hmm. So having that tavern experience brought to you or showed how to make certain things, I just love it. It's so great. People wanted to bring like LARP and D&D into a more cozy setting. It's not all plate mail and massive swords and shields. It's there's got to be a guy behind the bar. There's got to be an elf, an orc, a gelatinous cube behind the bar serving people.
Yay, I'm behind the bar. Okay.
All right, there's also another comment on YouTube from Anna about why I fed the paladin jerky. Because yeah, he deserved it.
Yeah, I put it up on the screen. I showed
there
it.
There you go.
I did the thing. Did it again. There it is again. All right, so just as some parting thoughts here, guys. We had one final question for you before we start wrapping this up. See if I can go find it. This is also from Anna. She said earlier, Kyle mentioned curating the information. Did any of y'all's personal experiences or stories end up in the book?
Well, I got one, because I actually, when they did the big playtest for 5th edition, which is called D&D Next, I played in it. And so actually one of my character sheets from D&D Next that I capped from like 2013 appears in the book.
That's cool.
Yeah. I think for us, that was great to feature John's actual sheet. You know, it's cool when things like that happen. Some of our photos did end up in there, things we took going to events or experiences, I know in both books. Mm-hmm. It's more about, you know, I played a lot of the adventures and I would be like, get a feel of it. And then what you try to do is, it's not me, nothing from me, but it's how I felt about it coming through in the way you try to look at what they were trying to do. Or I would, by the images we curated, I would go, oh, these moments really stick out for me. It's like, if I was playing Icewind Dale, it's like, I know what creatures I responded to or what adversaries. And then we would try to curate those things in. It's not like us, but it's how we experience them. And then we only have 4 or 5 pages to maybe showcase the book. So we would want to try to profile the things that we resonated with. And I think interviewing the creators or reading interviews with the creators, finding out, like, you know, the woman who was working on Strixhaven was like so heavily influenced by John Hughes films and things like that. And then you find out the interesting people that bring the games to life, and you try to tell their stories. It's less about us, though. It's more about this great, all these stewards in charge of the game now, how unique, all the unique voices coming to life, all the different types of people that are writing it from different backgrounds. You're seeing that manifested in the types of adventures they're doing, the explosion of settings, just the cultural touch points that are there that are beyond just like traditional Euro, which you used to, where it started from. I think that's really interesting. So we're just trying to showcase that, make a yearbook for everyone that's touched this game or played this game or is interested in the game, to see what it's really about. And I think that's what it is. It's really, there's a lot. It's a lot going on. It's not just like a story you're going to go, oh, I know the story. Even if you've played it, even if you think you've been following it, you're going to learn something. I think your mind will be blown by some of the images you see. You're like, what was that? Because we're showing native art. We're showing concept art. We're showing products in ways you haven't seen them before, and telling behind the scenes stories. And all of that collected, you go, whoa, this is a legit phenomenon.
That's very cool. All right. Now, at the beginning of the show, you had mentioned that what was coming next. Would you mind repeating that just for anybody who maybe wasn't here at the beginning and is catching up now, and then we'll start wrapping up?
November 7th is Heroes Feast Flavors of the Multiverse. That is the sequel to our New York Times bestselling Heroes Feast book. Also scheduled for November is the debut of the Heroes Feast television cooking show, coming from the people who make D&D. November 28th is Lore and Legends Special Edition. You can pre-order it now. It is exquisite. It is heavy. And as Sam always mentions, you can kill someone with it. It is so big and beautiful. It is a brick of a book. We also, you know, there's the Barnes & Noble version of both Lore and Legends and Heroes Feast Flavors of the Multiverse. We are going to be doing details coming soon, but we're going to be doing an event at Geeky Tees in Los Angeles. And Sam, myself, and Michael Whitworth, Sam's brother, will be there signing books, doing a little Q&A. We're trying to schedule one or two more other things for Los Angeles. John is going to be in Gamehole Con this weekend, correct, John?
That's true.
And you can get John and Michael to sign your books.
Wisconsin. Yeah, I will be there.
So there's opportunities to meet us, talk to us. We love the D&D conversation. We have more in the works beyond this too. And, you know, I mentioned too, there's a D&D, you know, history of documentary celebrating the 50-year anniversary of the brand. That'll be coming next year. More details on that soon. But there's, you know, we love D&D, so we're always happy to play in this world and share the stories and pick up John's other books if you have, and if you love this stuff, your mind will be blown.
If you really love it, like these don't work with the sound off.
I've read them all like twice. They're great.
IT Press books that are thick and dense, and yeah.
I've really enjoyed them. So
yeah.
To be fair, I did like I go through everyone's information to make sure I know what I'm talking about with everything you all do, and I looked up you, and I realized I have a lot of your books on my to read list. So
it's best to keep them there, really, you know.
My local library has two of your books that I'm going to try and get out. They're currently held by someone else, but once they're free
hostage,
again.
Yes, yeah.
But they're held hostage in Juneau, Alaska.
That's yeah, right. I know. There's like one library, okay?
For like the entire state or like
For the entirety of the city, it's the population of the place I'm in is just a smidge higher than my hometown in New York. So a capital city is like this much bigger.
It's also Alaska.
Yeah. All right, so Sam is on. Clearly, needs to attend to his dogs at this point. So
the dogs are like, dude, you said it was gonna be an hour. What's the problem?
Yeah, we're wrapping up. So thank you, Sam.
We can't ignore Sam. I know puppies. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No. It's all
look
good.
At that face, though.
It's hilarious. They literally have this really uncanny timing. And when I have been here longer than they expect, they're like, dude, time to move this into the living room. Come on, let's go.
Yeah,
let's go.
Can we do a quick little intro of the puppies, though? We need to know the puppies.
Sure. That's Leonard right there, who showed up in my backyard 2 months after I moved into this house. This is, do you see Buster?
Yes. In the way.
Buster, can you come over here? Buster, come over here. This is Walter.
Walter.
Met him at Dodger Stadium. Basically, he's wandering around Elysian Park. Can you turn? Good turn, he said. Buster. And then this is Buster, the sweetest. He's the emotional support animal of the three. He's a very sweet pit bull.
We love them all so much.
Good, like,
fantastic.
I feel though that Leonard is judging us.
Yes,
we're getting a look.
More than likely. All right. Well,
we'll wrap it up so that
let's wrap this up, guys. There's no
Sam needs to get back to the cuddle pile.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. So down in the show notes down below, you'll find a link to Lore and Legends, to the Amazon store. We've included that for you guys. And hopefully some guys will, if you're at all interested in this and you've been paying attention to this, go click that link. And you'll also have opportunity from that link to pre-order through Amazon the November 28th special edition release. That's all over Amazon. And that looks amazing. So if you haven't done that already, please click the link. Go check that out. We also have links to each one of their social medias down in the show notes down below, so you guys can follow them on Twitter, X, or whatever you're choosing to call the Dead Bird app these days. And so that's down there as well. And then Kathleen, take it away.
Alrighty. Well, last Friday we aired our interview with Gordon Wolvett. You'll likely best know Gordon from his time on Gene Roddenberry's.
Hang on.
Mike Chen! I love that guy.
That's the wrong one.
That's Mike Chen.
How about someone may not have me updated the notes.
Good job, Tim. I'm just reading
that
my
one's
script.
Still there, though.
Yeah, you can still go listen to Gordon.
Last week, we released our interview with Mike Chen that I would tell you more about if I remembered any of it, but I have
he's a wonderful, wonderful author. He started off as a San Jose Sharks beat writer. He loves hockey, loves dogs. He had a corgi. He's a corgi dad like me. And he's written for Star Trek and Star Wars, both wonderful author. Go check him out.
And he's totally not Gordon Wolvett.
Totally not Gordon Wolvett, no.
But there was an interview
with Gordon Wolvett. Gordon, yes. Wolvett. Episode 154 by chance.
Ben, it's Ben's turn.
Okay. We're all out of place here. All right, hang on. You can find this episode, that episode, and many others on our YouTube channel and your favorite audio podcast providers. Especially good pods. And remember, your subscription to our YouTube channel is a major help, so please don't forget to check that out. Like, subscribe, comment, and check us out on Patreon as well. So
that's right. And then coming up this Friday, we do have our interview with Brendan Wayne. One of the men, that's right, underneath, one of the men under the suit on the show. That's highlighted there on the screen. We talk with Brendan about his career, but not show specific because he is still striking. But we did talk to him about the legacy that his grandfather, John Wayne, left behind and the weight of trying to carry that legacy, but also creating his own legacy as well at the same time. And but if you don't want to wait till Friday, you can, of course, go to our Patreon channel. Link in show notes down below. And you can check out that conversation. We have a really good one with him, but you can check out that conversation probably tomorrow on our Patreon channel, and possibly Wednesday, but more than likely tomorrow. And you can check that out there with early access for only 3 whole George Washingtons a month. You can be checking those things out early. So anyway, a big thank you to Sam, to John, to Kyle. Thank you guys so much for coming and spending some time with us. This was a lot of fun, and and thank you to everyone who participated with comments and things in the notes down below. So on that, we will say goodbye.
Goodbye.
On behalf of the rest of the hosts of the FSF podcast, we want to thank you for listening to this episode. If you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, please contact us by means of Twitter or Instagram using the handle @FSFpodcast, or go to www.fsfpodcast.com and click on the contact link. Thanks again, and hope you enjoyed the episode.